This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
In the simplest terms, ADHD can be described where the thoughts, the words, and the emotions are not in sync with each other. Hello people, welcome to another episode of our podcast, The SOS Show. I'm your host, Suchita. Thank you for joining me. And I hope you guys checked out the episode last week that we released, which was Corona and its implications on mental health. And I hope all of you are keeping yourself safe and sane during these times. This episode, we're going to focus on ADHD, which is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, and its impact on mental health. And we are being joined by Dr. Tony Lloyd. Dr. Tony Lloyd is an award-winning CEO and has led the ADHD Foundation Neurodiversity Charity in the UK. The foundation has led the campaign for best practices in healthcare and treatment of ADHD and in training teachers and parents how to understand the needs of the child to ensure good educational outcomes. Tony has also played a key role in the production of national and international reports that are available to read on the website adhdfoundation.org.uk, and these reports are called A Lifetime Lost or A Lifetime Gained. Tony has over 25 years as experience as a mental health practitioner and consultant advisor, and you can find him on LinkedIn, which is Tony Lloyd PhD, and you can also follow them on Twitter, ADHD Foundation, Facebook, ADHD Foundation. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the podcast, The SOS Show.
Thank you.
So you are under lockdown like everyone else.
We are indeed, yes. It's quite unprecedented, isn't it? But this is what we have to do right now to make sure everybody stays well.
Absolutely. Tony, you are the CEO of ADHD Foundation, which is based out of UK. And for our listeners, would you like to elaborate, what is ADHD?
ADHD is one of a number of what we call neurodevelopmental conditions. So it falls under an umbrella of things like dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, autism. They all fall under this umbrella of neurodevelopmental conditions. So what we know is that one in five human beings are neurodiverse. One in five human beings have one of those difficulties to varying degrees. And if one in five of those people have those kind of conditions, then we know that they're not errors of genetics. We know that they are part of the whole spectrum of neurodiversity. But we do know that people who have neurodiverse conditions can experience some difficulty. So with ADHD, for example, which stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, it's a very broad acronym. The main difficulties with it are having poor concentration, poor memory, difficulty with planning and organizing thoughts, difficulty with self-regulating thoughts and emotions. So as well as poor attention, you have some impulsivity that could be of thought, word, or emotion. It's difficult to filter what's happening in your brain and how you respond to your environment. Some people are hyperactive, but not everybody. So that can be a bit misleading. And it can, you know, you can have a hyperactive mind. You don't have to have a hyperactive body. So it is impulsivity, sometimes hyperactivity, poor concentration and memory, and what we also call poor executive functioning skills, which is that ability to plan and organize your thoughts in order to plan and organize your life.
So it's more like a disconnect between your thought, your words, and your emotions?
That could be one way of describing it, Chichita, yes.
Absolutely. Tell me, Tony, you mentioned this while we were talking the other day, that you yourself have gone through ADHD. You have ADHD.
Yes.
So just making it slightly more personal.
Yeah.
What is it that you experienced? How did you come to know that you had ADHD? Is it something that you detected while you were a child or while you were an adult?
Well, it really only came to me when I was, by the time I was an adult. I'm in my 50s now. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've only really learned a lot about ADHD in the past 20 years because of the explosion in research into neuroscience and how the brain works and how the brain learns. I was born in the 60s, and obviously I was an academically gifted child. So I always did very well at school, but I did experience a lot of anxiety, which is extremely common for people with ADHD because my brain had to work 10 times harder than everybody else's.
What kind of anxiety, and what did you feel when you had the anxiety?
It would be very difficult to get to sleep because my mind wouldn't switch off. One of the reasons, or one of the reasons people with ADHD experience a lot of anxiety, is that when you're trying too hard to concentrate, to remember information, your brain is producing, or your body is producing, a lot of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. And those stress hormones are only designed to be used when you are in high pressure situations where your body can give you that extra turbocharge. If you're using lots of stress hormones every single day just to function, then it predisposes your nervous system to high levels of anxiety and depression. So that was really how it affected me when I was young. It wasn't until I was about 29 that I was doing a lot of research about the positive psychology studies that were coming out of Harvard and other places, where I recognized that I had to apply certain strategies and routines and structures in order for me to succeed at university and in order for me to do my job. It was only when I got to about 30 I realized that it was ADHD. But one of the reasons was is that traditionally in the West, anyway, there's been a lot of stigma about ADHD being about children who can't behave, or children who are lazy or won't work in class, which of course we all know is not true. But we do know that there are certain learning differences and difficulties that come with ADHD. So once I understood what it was, I learned to manage it successfully. And obviously, that wasn't just about using medication. That was about exercising every day, practicing stress reduction every day, meditation, yoga, and when I needed it, taking medication as well.
So are you still on medication?
I am indeed, yes.
Okay. You know, I have been sort of researching more on ADHD, and of course Einstein had it, and Da Vinci had it, and Mozart had it, and Justin Timberlake has it, where, you know, he has been talking about, you know, how he uses it as a tool to function in daily life. He perhaps also has certain strategies. Is there some strategies you would like to share from your personal experience, you know, besides like yoga, besides meditation? What happens when you are put under a condition of stress because you work, you are on a job, and of course you have a family? How do you manage and keep the work-life balance?
Even now, not always very well, Sushita, I must say, being a workaholic seems to be part and parcel of an ADHD profile. So there's been a lot of research that there are lots of successful entrepreneurs who have ADHD. We know that there are lots of people with ADHD who work in the technology industries, in creative industries. Lots of people in you know, robotics, bioscience. We know that a lot of the big growth companies in the early part of the 21st century who are really influencing our culture actively recruit neurodiverse employees because they can think in ways that computers can't. And I think for, you know, for myself, I have a really good team. And like a lot of people, I've learned to play to my strengths. So I know that there are things that I'm very good at, but there are some things that I'm not very good at. So I play to my strengths, and I make sure that the team of staff I have around me can help with those things that I'm not particularly good at. But I do also have regular sessions with a coach. And I've learned as much as I can about the condition to understand that there are certain things I need to do. Having a very rigorous daily routine is quite important. Mm-hmm. And also every day I use an electronic diary and I use a written sort of task list for the day where I can prioritize and be strategic while at the same time allowing some flexibility in order to be reactive, as sometimes as a CEO I need to be reactive and need to respond to events as they're happening at the time. And obviously running a healthcare organization, you know, sometimes there are certain situations and circumstances where, you know, the routine has to be put to one side while I deal with an urgent matter. So it's also really about what we call executive functioning skills, that ability to plan, organize, prioritize. And it's something, Shishita, that really you have to practice daily. You know, all of these things about living successfully with ADHD have to be habitual. They have to be daily. If they're not, then ADHD can take over. ADHD can be an asset to you sometimes, but if you don't understand it and you don't manage it well, it can take over your life and you know, be quite harmful to your health and your career and to your relationships.
And how can we, of course, I can see a lot of mental health points here. If you would like to elaborate on how does it affect your mental health in your day-to-day function and your relationships and your job? Is it like, you know, a person with ADHD can, you know, if these things that you have mentioned, like, of course, you are functioning to your optimum every day with your job and with your family. So what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'd like to say I perform to my optimum every day, but there are days that I don't. I don't think any of us bat 100 every day, do we? But I think it is about having a good relationship with yourself. I think it's also about knowing what your particular stresses are. And I think we also have to understand that one of the things about ADHD, that creativity that is fueled by a need for more dopamine in your brain, which is this amazing hormone involved in memory and learning and creativity and innovation and inventiveness. One of the difficulties, of course, with that is that we can satisfy our craving for dopamine in other ways. So as well as the difficulty with anxiety and depression, which I mentioned before, one of the problems with unmanaged ADHD is people can seek dopamine through eating food. So we know that unmanaged ADHD is also correlating with eating disorders and obesity, which places you at high risk of diabetes and other health problems. We know that ADHD also correlates with high blood pressure. We know that ADHD, because of the anxiety, correlates with what we call low emotional resilience. So when traumatic events happen in our lives, as they do to all of us, sometimes our ability to deal with those is perhaps not as good as somebody who is neurotypical. So you do need to have a whole toolkit in your, you know, in your toolbox of things that you can do to help you manage, but also recognize that there are certain things and certain situations that might cause you a great deal more stress perhaps than others. So with ADHD, I mentioned before that it's one of a whole family of difficulties. I have mild dyslexia as well. And I also have some what's called sensory integration difficulties, which is a trait that's normally associated with autism. I have no autism traits apart from that sensory integration. So I find very loud noises or too many conversations going on at once, my brain goes into overload. It's a bit like having your browser open with far too many tabs. your processing speed completely slows down. Or another way of describing it is being in a room with five televisions on and they're all playing a different channel and it's very difficult to focus on one thing. It's not really that you have an attention deficit. It's almost like an attention surplus where you can't filter out other things, and that in itself can sometimes be quite stressful. It's about how you can quieten your mind.
And
be conscious of how you self-regulate, because we all know, don't we, that we have a brain, but we have our mind, and our mind is our whole nervous system and our endocrine system, and they all work in a very connected and complex way. So our mental well-being affects our physical well-being. And it is very much about lots of healthy lifestyle choices, so that you know, these are the things I can manage well, these things maybe I don't manage so well. And, you know, making sure that your colleagues at work and your friends and family around you understand that, and they can support you with those things that you don't do as well, or that you find particularly stressful. Because remember, ADHD is only a small part of us, Shahita. There's lots of, you know, it's a part of who we are. It doesn't define who we are.
Totally. And Tony, how does one get ADHD? Can anyone get ADHD at any point in their life because of a trigger like a stress, or is it more genetically driven?
It's genetically driven. It's it doesn't mean to say that either of your parents have ADHD, although that is quite common. So we know if a parent has ADHD, there's at least a 50% chance that they'll have a child with ADHD. It's genetic in origin. There are rare instances where ADHD can be caused by something else. The most common one being epilepsy in childhood, or brain injury, even brain injury as a result of traumatic birth. Another risk factor is prematurity. So children who are born premature, it increases the risk. So really what we're talking about here is we're into the field of epigenetics, where you have this genetic potential, but early life events can affect the presentation of ADHD. So ADHD, like autism, is a spectrum condition. You can have some aspects of it in a very mild form or in a very severe form. And remember, these things that we're talking about are part of a natural kind of spectrum of human behavior. All children, for example, can be impulsive. All children have poor memory and poor executive functioning skills. All children can be hyperactive. In order for it to be ADHD, it has to be above a certain scale. It has to be extreme. And obviously, traumatic events in childhood can make a mild ADHD much more severe. So it's important that we identify it very early on in childhood, and it's important that we manage it and help the child and the family understand what it is and how to manage it. And sometimes, you know, use medication. All the research tells us that the earlier we medicate, the more likely the child is to have better mental health in adulthood, the more likely the child is to achieve in their education and their career. And of course, many adults now continue to use ADHD medication in adulthood. And there are lots of adults who are only now being diagnosed as adults because we didn't really understand it as much 20, 30 years ago. So there are people that are discovering that they have ADHD now, but for the most part, they've had it since they were born.
Oh my God! Okay, but Tony, what are the kind of figures that would be there in terms of maybe the kind of percentage the world over people would be having ADHD, and you know, what is the kind of is there a difference in locations, like perhaps the UK has more ADHD or US has less ADHD?
The World Health Organization states that the global prevalence is 5.26%. Now, we do know that there is a higher prevalence of ADHD in certain indigenous populations. So, for example, in populations where until very recently in their cultural history, they've lived a hunter-gatherer lifestyle. So we know that North American Indians, certain sort of Latin American sort of communities, Australian Aboriginal communities, Inuit communities who live in very high northern latitudes where there is very little daylight for half the year. But we do know in the UK, it's underdiagnosed. So instead of it being 5.26% in the UK, it's 2.9% that are diagnosed and less than 1% are medicated. In the US, it's very high. It's about 12%. And nobody's quite sure whether this is because it's being overprescribed and overdiagnosed in the United States, or whether it's also something about the fact that that what has been called the wanderer gene or the adventurer gene, which is a factor of ADHD, is that many of the people who emigrated to the United States actually had that genetic potential anyway. So we know it is higher in the United States. Across Europe, it fluctuates anywhere between 1% and 3% of people who are diagnosed. So, yes, there are some variations in some populations, but globally it's 5.26%. So that's 1 in 20 people, Sheeta. That's a lot of human beings who have ADHD, and it's been around for as long as human beings have been around. Like I said, it's part of that natural kind of diversity of human neurology, which is why we're moving away from this language of disorder. And in the UK, there is this emerging kind of paradigm now, what we're calling a neurodiverse paradigm, where we're saying, well, actually, if we understood dyslexia and dyspraxia and ADHD and autism and all these other things much better, we would ensure that we know how to teach them, how to educate them at school, how to help them play to their strengths and choose the kind of careers that they would really like and would really thrive in. But unfortunately, within our education system, which was really designed in the 19th century, where we give children lots of information and then we expect them to remember all of that and test them on it at the end of the year. You know, the question we're asking now is that really the best way to measure intelligence? And actually, have we got our concept of intelligence wrong? Do we actually really need to redefine that in the 21st century? Because we now know that, you know, in the UK, for example, 60 years ago, a child who had dyslexia was expected not to achieve anything in school, not to be very able, not to be as employable. Well, we all know now that in the 21st century, dyslexia is no barrier to achievement. So you have obviously very famous people like Richard Branson, who has dyslexia as well as ADHD. And we know that Microsoft Office 365 effectively eradicates ADHD. So in the same way that people who wear glasses to see, you know, if you couldn't see properly, you would have not been able to read, you would have struggled at school, you would have been classed as lacking in intelligence and lacking ability and wouldn't have done very well in exams. Well, we know that that's nonsense now, because glasses enable people to see in the same way that technology now helps remove a lot of those difficulties with dyslexia. And with ADHD, we know that good lifestyle and medication can radically reduce all the impairments that go with ADHD. That doesn't mean to say that sometimes it isn't difficult. But when you know something, you name it, you understand it, you learn how to manage it.
True. And how does it ever get cured? Or is it more like your habits? If you direct or channelize your habits in the right way and your mind in the right way, you can control it.
You can control it and you can manage it and you can play.
But it doesn't get cured.
No, and I don't think actually we should actually even be talking about curing it, because by using that kind of language, we're implying, aren't we, that there's something medically wrong.
Medically wrong. Okay.
And I think we are now beginning to move away from that mindset, we're beginning to look at, should we get rid of this disorder word? You know, do we need to start reframing our language and stop disabling people because they are not neurotypical?
Sure. But does this information bombardment, the constant social media, you know, the Twitters and the Facebooks, you know, affect ADHD as well?
That's a really interesting question. I mentioned before that one of the challenges with ADHD is it does carry a greater risk of addiction. So, again, it's that craving for more dopamine, which can either drive creativity or can find solace in things like food or smoking or drinking. Because lots of people self-medicate these days to deal with their anxiety, whether it's through caffeine and coffee and, you know, and things like this. But I think, you know, if we can manage it well, if we can understand it well, and we can recognize that there are certain lifestyle choices we have to make, then we can close any trap doors and focus on the positives of it. So, yes, it can be challenging, but, you know, there are many very successful people who have ADHD. So, you know, it's not something that we should think of as, well, something we can cure. Do we want to cure it? Would we want a world without people with ADHD? I don't think we should. I don't think that would be a good thing for humanity. If there are 1 in 20 people that have ADHD, then from an evolutionary perspective, there's a very important reason why it's part of the diversity of human neurology.
And any challenges that you faced personally in your relationships when it comes to ADHD or work life when it comes to ADHD?
Yes, I think sometimes people with ADHD can be quite direct, which means that sometimes they may not be perceived as being as diplomatic. So they do tend to sort of say it how it is. But again, I think whatever role you're in, I mean, for example, there are lots of very successful athletes who have ADHD, and it's one of the reasons why they're very successful athletes. It's about which particular part of your life you're talking about. So for me, I'm very fortunate, obviously, because I'm a psychologist and I've sort of done a lot of training around relationships, and I've spent a lot of my life using therapy and life coaching as a way of helping me learn good communication skills and relationship skills. That doesn't stop you from being sensitive. It doesn't stop you from perhaps making mistakes, but it does help you understand that how we feel isn't necessarily how the world is. And it's a really important lesson, isn't it? It's that lesson that when we're children, we're led by our emotions, because our brains aren't fully developed, particularly our higher functioning brains. We're always led by what we feel. And then in puberty and adolescence, we begin to learn that you can't always act how you feel or say how you feel, because as human beings, we're a social species and we have to live in social groups. We need to belong. That's where we thrive. So we learn the social mores and behaviors that enable us to belong, whether that's the belonging in the community at work, belonging, the kind of behaviors we want in our home life, the kind of behaviors that we have amongst our friends. We adapt our behavior to the social group. And I think that's important for every human being, not just people with ADHD, but people with ADHD obviously have to develop a little bit more skill in making sure that, you know, they are better able to self-regulate their emotions and be mindful all the time that how you feel isn't necessarily how you should behave.
Totally. And Tony, as I'm talking to you, of course, because you know yourself so well, you are so mindful about what you're doing every moment. How does one become more mindful every day? How do you keep yourself at it?
That's a really big question, isn't it? I think for everybody who's listening, irrespective of whether they've got ADHD, they would say, well, because we live such busy lives now, don't we? The world is a 24/7 world.
Yes.
And I think every human being would like to know the answer to that question. How do we always be at our best? And again, I think it is about healthy lifestyle choices and daily habitual things that we prioritize that make our life worth living. And I would say that the genetic imperative in human beings is relationship driven. The most important decisions in our lives, the things that make us feel alive and thrive and be happy, are the relationships we have with other human beings. And every decision we make and every action we make impacts on the human beings around us. So, for me, it has always been about the real value of friendships and quality relationships. And certainly for those of us who work very long hours and high pressure jobs, sometimes it's easy to forget, isn't it, that the people who give us the most energy, who make our lives worth living most, our wives, our husbands, our children, our friends, it's important to make sure that we give those things the priority that they deserve, and not allow work to completely take over our lives, and we have a good work-life balance. And that's a challenge for all of us, isn't it, in the 21st century, Shikita?
Yes, it is. Tony, and what about coronavirus creating so much anxiety, lockdowns, economic slowdown? How can one keep oneself safe, specifically when it comes to ADHD?
Again, it's a question that a lot of people are asking at the moment, Cheetah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would say, as far as possible, stick to your structure and routine. So if you're going to be working remotely from home, you still get up at the same time. You still get dressed for work. You use technology as much as possible in terms of video conferencing meetings and things like that. You carry on your life as normal. You just make sure that there is a place in your home where you are free of any other distractions, no television. If other family members at home, ask them to kind of leave you in peace and quiet in the room that you're working from, so that you can reduce your distractions and keep to your daily routine as much as possible. It is a stressful time for a lot of people, and it presents some unique challenges, doesn't it? But again, we need to be creative and innovative and inventive in our approaches to how we all manage this situation, and hopefully learn some very important lessons from it about how adaptable, how remarkably adaptable the human species can be. And, dare I say this as well, a sense of common humanity and decency and understanding that, being kind and considerate of others, being supportive of others, we will all get through this. But I think for people who experience ADHD, keep to your routine, make sure that you don't have any increased anxiety as a result of this. And when it comes to exercise, there's a lot of exercise that you can do at home, even if it's just running on the spot or skipping. But yes, do everything that you can to stay well and for life to carry on as much as normal a routine as possible.
And Tony, as we wrap up the talk, I just want to know, how can ADHD Foundation, because you're based out of UK, can somebody from India also connect with you guys?
They can, yes, via our website, which also has a facility on it called Browse Aloud. So it will read out documents for people who might have difficulty reading. It will translate into different languages from the website. But we also have social media platforms. So on Facebook, it's ADHD Foundation. There are lots of articles and information posted on there every day, and also on Twitter. And certainly for anybody who is working in this field, via LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn at Tony Lloyd, and there's also a LinkedIn ADHD Foundation page. We have been in touch with a number of schools and a number of clinicians in India, and we've been asked to open a foundation in India, which is sort of financially not possible at the moment. But I think ultimately, you know, when that happens, you know, if there are people in India that want to make that happen, then we'd certainly be willing to help them do so, because it would need to be run from India. It would need to reflect, you know, the needs and the unique differences about India. It's a vast country. I spent a year there working some time ago. So yes, they can connect using technology, certainly. And as I say, I do hope that as people begin to get a greater understanding of neurodevelopmental conditions and recognize that, you know, they're not disorders. They can be something that you can live very happily and successfully with. But we also have a better understanding, particularly around ADHD, so that more doctors, more teachers know how to teach children. Parents know how to parent children with ADHD. Doctors know how to treat children with ADHD. The more we can do to inform ourselves, then we can really make a huge difference to the lives of many, many children in India, and indeed many adults, because those children are going to become adults at some point. And we want them all, don't we, to be happy and healthy and achieve their potential and be good citizens. You know, and I think we have to move past any stigma or ignorance and understand that this is part of the natural diversity of human nature. So it's something that, you know, we'd like to be able to help people in India with more. It's not something that we can do at the moment beyond what's available online. But certainly we'd be happy to support any organization in India that was looking to develop a specific ADHD Foundation India. Yes, Shahita, we would.
Yes, sure. Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us for this conversation, and have a good day ahead.
Thank you very much indeed. Lovely to talk to you.
If you're able to become more mindful, you'll be able to function at the optimum and have a fantastic work-life balance, just like Tony. You, of course, can connect us on all the social media platforms, Epilogue Media, Metaphysical Lab. So guys, take good care of yourself. These are the trying times. These are the challenging times. They can push us to the brink, because all of us are holed up in our houses. And of course, it's never happened before. But at the same time, we can use the energy to propel us to become the best version of our own selves. So be good and take care.